Good morning. Do I have levels? I have levels. It's Paul. And it is... What is it? Must be Wednesday. It's Wednesday, October 30th. 2013. Kids are dropped off. Oh, I blew it yesterday. Well, they blew it. I get up in plenty of time to take them to school. But the result was I didn't get a chance to record. I processed some of my recordings from earlier in the week and end of last week. I'm a couple podcasts behind getting things up and running, which is probably how it'll work. I'll be always like a few days behind. I don't know how much longer I'm going to do this series. It would... If I can get the kids on more of a routine, it'll go better. This morning, again, 2 minutes late. We try our best. I give them such a wide margin, as much as I can. They wasted 20 minutes getting dressed. They were upstairs arguing while I was downstairs trying to make some coffee and fix their breakfast, and their mom was asleep on the couch. So then we were late and trying to push them out the door. I had to take their breakfast away before they finished eating it, basically shove them out the door, and then getting Sam to move quickly. Joshua will run if you tell him to run. He'll just happily run circles around you, and he, like, does crisscross down the sidewalk. He'll stay up with me, keep up with me no matter how fast I'm walking. If I say we need to walk this fast, he's there. Sam, not so much. It's like no force that will make Sam move faster other than carrying him. At least he didn't stay just sit down strike, although he was complaining a lot. I'm still experimenting with the recorder. It really seems like just holding the recorder, pointing it at my nose with the windscreen on it, the little dead cat windscreen, produces the best sound. But, it also, when it's cold, it means that the thing has a tendency to go dead. The battery voltage drops because of the cold. I did an experiment with these microphones that I've got. They were very expensive microphones back when I bought them. Well, I don't know, but you count very expensive. I think the set was almost $300. And I've used them for binaural recording and things like that. They're very high quality. This device supplies plug-in power, supposedly, for them. But I tried them in my walk, I think it was Monday, when I talked about Lou Reed, and the net result was that there's constant noise from the wires, from the cables, like banging against my coat as I walked. transferred to the mics. It's really quite loud. And also there was a weird thing where one channel was much louder than the other. Like the plug-in power isn't being distributed to both mics, like it was only going to one channel. To gain that channel up and not the other. I don't know what that's about. It doesn't do that on my other recorder. So, that also meant that one side was clipping a lot. But it's this sort of weird little transient clips. Almost more like digital clipping than analog, although that doesn't really make sense why it would be digital. But just like this constant patter of little analog spikes, little spikes in the signal that are clipped, and so it sounds like ticking. Almost, they call that popcorn noise. And so I wasn't satisfied with that. It requires a lot of post-processing to try and clean it up. And then the little windscreens I had on those mics, they make everything seem very muted, which means I need to do more aggressive EQ to put, like, pump some air back into the sound. Anyway, it doesn't sound good. It doesn't sound as good as doing it this way. But this may... I did a whole segment where the recorder just died. Last week it was I thought it was pretty good. But the recorder died about halfway through with no... doesn't beep or flash or anything like that. It just silently goes dead. And since I have it pointed at my face, I can't see the screen. So I got into this habit of, like, checking it occasionally, compulsively, just to make sure that it's still recording. Which is stupid, because moving it around affects the sound. Anyway. I did a thing on Sprawl, and I want to do a kind of follow-up to that briefly. One of the sort of aspects of the collapse of the downtown here in Saginaw and the rise of Sprawl is that one of the consequences is that there is not within walking distance a cafe where I could go for breakfast. Now, well, actually there is. By cafe, I mean a place that actually specializes in coffee. There is a diner. But that's not quite my... That's in the morning, that's the senior citizen crowd, and they're not quite my crowd yet. Although, as the years go by, I can feel myself forming a stronger affinity for that lifestyle. I'd like to be retired. But there is a place down by the river called the Red Eye Cafe. And it is within walking distance, sort of. I will have to try it. I don't think I've ever walked directly there. Google Maps says it's 1.4 miles or something like that. It's probably about, 15-minute miles. maybe a little less. I haven't timed myself in that way either. 20-minute miles, probably. So it's probably a 20-minute walk. The problem is then it's a 20-minute walk back. And and I have under an hour to do my walk in the morning, in between dropping the kids off and being at my desk for a morning conference call. So it's pushing it. I might try, but if I did, I'd have to basically just go and get a coffee and a to-go mug and come back. I could time that, but it seems I'd like to go walk, you know, 10 minutes, sit and chat with people for 30 minutes, and walk 10 minutes back. That would be more ideal. Also, there was a local Thai restaurant we were trying our best to support. Went in, I guess it's been a year and a half. Behind Fuzzy's, behind the diner, near the diner, in a building that was an old fire station. And we really liked that place. We liked the people running it. They were trying to bring some really good quality Thai food to this neighborhood. And their food was great. It was wrong for the neighborhood in the sense that it's a pricier night out kind of thing than probably than the neighborhood can really support as far as people's income. But I don't know, the way I feel about that is partly that, you know, you do what you choose for entertainment. Some people have no money for any kind of entertainment whatsoever. They really have no discretionary income. They're just surviving, and no restaurant is going to really be an option. And that's true. Although people with little money still often wind up, because they also have vanishingly little time because of the amount they work, they wind up going through drive-thrus, you know, which is not efficient cost-wise or very good for them health-wise. But I guess what I'm getting at is we've chosen to spend almost nothing on entertainment in the sense that we don't pay for cable TV. We don't pay for to go to movies in the theater. We do buy DVDs. But something like this would be our entertainment for the week. Might be if Grace and I got a chance, got a sitter, and went out for a meal. And it's not a cheap meal as meals go, but it's as the one thing we did that week for fun, maybe not so bad. Anyway, they have closed, and I feel very saddened about that. They're selling the building, I think. It's just another failure. It's just another failure here. Our friend was going to get a cafe off the ground, which would have been just down the street, which would have been that place I went to pretty much every weekday morning to get a coffee, to say hi to people, to do my little bit of socializing, to get out of the house, for that to be my third place. Given that I work from home, I've got really no second place, so the need for a third place is even more acute. I have to get out once in a while. Going for the walks is very helpful. But getting out to be around other people, change of walls, change of environment, even just briefly, it's very helpful too. I'm at the 16-minute mark. Okay, I've completed most of a lap. I went to a Halloween thing, a get-together. There was a neighborhood Halloween parade and then a chili cook-off, and I had a lot to do. That was, I think, Sunday? I don't remember. But, so I didn't go to most of it. But I did stop by briefly. In the afternoon, I walked down to see if I could taste some chili and say hi to people. And I found the place, and it was in someone's garage that had like a bar set up and some tables set up. And they were just handing out the awards for the chili. But I had to leave because there were a couple people. One guy smoking an e-cigarette, which I guess I can tolerate. They don't put up much in the way of vapors. But one guy just openly smoking menthols or something, like cool cigarettes, in this closed garage. And that wasn't gonna work for me. Also, one of our neighbors was there, who's 8 months pregnant, and she was also there with her little boy, who was 2.5 or something. But so not only was this guy smoking around adults, but also around a pregnant woman and children. I couldn't believe it. Saginaw continues to shock me. Why anyone would think that in 2013 that's acceptable behavior in any kind of group. That shit would never fly in Ann Arbor. And so I realized that I either had to leave or I was going to have to confront him. And since I was the guest, and I think this was his home, I left. I just snuck up and left. People might wonder why I was only there for about 2 minutes. But I didn't want my clothes to stink. I didn't want to have to wash my coat, my jacket, every item of clothing to try and get the smell of cigarette smoke out. And I didn't want to have like a cough all week, which will happen, especially in the winter. Something like just an hour or two exposure to cigarette smoke could set up my lungs for making me sick for a real infection kind of thing. I didn't want to carry the smoke home because Sam is very sensitive to it as well. I didn't want to give him asthma indirectly by bringing home the smell of cigarette smoke on my clothes. This shit is toxic. Now, I understand that people are addicted, and I understand that cigarettes are harder to kick than heroin. They really are. But that's such an antisocial act, I don't even know where to begin. Wow. Well, you know, the guy was giving off. He was drunk, and he was giving off really hostile vibes. And Grace tells me that she had seen him earlier in the day, and he had been, like, saying strange things to her. Like, he'd look at her and say, mutter to one of his friends, say, oop, I guess we can't talk about that here. And then she's like, talk about what? So, oh, never mind. They'd like, you know, be giggling at each other. So I don't know what that was about, except that it, call me crazy, may have had something to do with the fact that she was the only black person in the room. Maybe it was because she's Jewish, I don't know. Anyway. 21 minutes, that's a good warm-up. The topic I'd like to try and reconstruct, but I don't know if this is going to work because my recorder may die. I'm trying to warm it up in my hands. This is getting stupid. The recorder may die at any minute. The topic I want to try and reconstruct, and I'll try and be quick, is sleep. This relationship with sleep. I have come to understand my childhood and teenage years, high school years, and college years as being, in many ways, one long experiment in sleep deprivation, chronic sleep deprivation. And I know how that experiment ends, how it comes out, along with probably diet that doesn't support eating healthy fats for mood, for brain health. It ends in major depression. And probably overweight. And maybe seasonal affective disorder. But it's interesting being a parent. It really pushes your buttons, every button you've got that you didn't know you have. But it makes you reassess and understand your own childhood in the light of how your children behave, how they act, how they react to the things you throw at them, that life throws at them. And you can kind of compare it to your memories and what you've been told. But I remember feeling just very vividly, very gut level, I think, how awful it felt to have to get up before dawn. Way before dawn. And I think I was really defiant when it came to sleep. My mom was a working mother, working single mother. She didn't, we didn't get home and set up for dinner early. Like, we didn't have dinner at 6, so we weren't in bed by 8. I think our bedtime when I was probably Sam's age, maybe a little older, I think our bedtime was 10 o'clock and we would have been getting up around 6:30, which for a child of 7 or 8 or 10, that's probably way too little sleep. But I think that was the pattern, that was probably the best we did most times. Maybe we tried earlier, I don't remember the details. But I think I was generally short on sleep, probably because, in part because TV was such a, watching TV was such a, an appealing thing to do and made me want so badly to stay up and keep watching. I remember, I think it had to go off, it was either when Rockford Files came on, that was the signal. I think that was 10. Or it may have been when Kolchak, the Night Stalker, came on, which I've still never seen a whole episode of, and I'd like to see. But I can't remember for sure. May have been when we saw the Columbo's flashlight through the fog, the NBC mystery movie. It may have been all of those in different combination at different points. But I think that would be fair, it would be fair to say that I was generally sleep deprived. And that continued in high school. And it continued partly voluntarily as a lifestyle choice on my part. Because of my job, I worked at a grocery store, actually at a couple of different grocery stores, and I worked a shift after school, either from 4 to 10 or 5 to 11. On those, and I'd take something to eat, or I'd buy something to eat, and it would usually be candy or cookies or something. So it was a 6-hour shift. May have been 5-hour shifts in some cases, but at least that's, I remember them as being generally 6-hour shifts. As a bag boy, and I would do stocking and cleaning and stuff like that at a couple of different grocery stores. And then come home, maybe get home after 11, watch the end of the news, watch Letterman, and then about 1 o'clock, I think, about 1 o'clock, consider what kind of homework I was going to do, if any. Maybe write a paper. and go to bed, maybe by 1:30 or something. And then get up at 6:30. Which, in the winter, was way before dawn. At least an hour before dawn. And so, chronically sleep-deprived through high school, too. And I know that that messed with me. I would fall asleep in class constantly. I wasn't alert through many classes. I was basically sleepwalking through my day in school, as if there wasn't enough incentive to do that because of the the environment and the interest level of most of my classes. So when I had a chance, when I could voluntarily not be getting up before dawn, when it's not compulsory, my natural setting is to get up considerably later and to stay up considerably later. And it's in the late evening. I'm sorry, I keep handling the recorder. I'm trying to keep my hands wrapped around it and hopefully keep the battery life longer by keeping it warmer. But my hands are getting freezing holding this metal thing in cold air. But I came to realize and identify as a night owl. That's when I could think. The evening is when the brain would be fully engaged, and the rest of the day would seem like just kind of a fog of routine without much thought, just like reactivity and passive things happening to me. But it would be in the evening that the neurons would actually fire, and I'd have some insight and self-awareness, like I'd wake up like a second time after maybe around 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, something like that. It's like I would wake up and realize, oh, here I am. It's the start of another day. So, like, I had a physical body that was going through its wake and sleep cycle, and my mental body, at least parts of my brain, were off cycle. We're going through their own cycle, but off by many hours. And I think a lot of people experience that. I think there's basically, when they study people, they break them down into owls and larks. And there's probably an evolutionary biology explanation for why a Paleolithic human community would have people that lived on different shifts. Probably one reason being that some people would be up to warn against predators while the other people were sleeping. I don't know. I may have pulled that out of my butt. But it makes sense to me. So there's that aspect of sleep, which is that some people just don't seem suited to being morning people. But that's in conflict with other things that I feel about sleep and have read and studied about sleep, which is, that I experience, which is basically that we seem ultimately to be suited and programmed to wake up at dawn and go to bed at sunset, and that messing with that, with artificial light, is what screws us up, is what is painful for us, causes us to get out of sync and all kinds of serotonin problems and whatnot. So I can't quite reconcile how to fit those things together. There's a meme going around, and I think it's true, that basically if you want to be a creative person who gets things done, you have to be a lark and not an owl. In other words, you have to get up early. You have to use that morning time. And so that's what I've been doing, in the context of having to get up early to take the kids to school. I have to say, doing it on foot is a lot nicer and kinder to my sensibilities and asks less of me than having me get in this massive multi-ton vehicle and drive there, even though it's only a few minutes. It's just like the consequences of losing my focus are a lot lower. <clears throat> 35 minutes, it's still going. We'll hope that it holds out. Maybe the NiCads, the rechargeable batteries, will last a little better than the lithium, which would be interesting. I don't know. I need to rig up something. Either figure out what to do with the mics, get some different mics, get a different recorder, or get like some kind of glove thing that fits over my hand in the recorder, which I can trade off and keep the thing warm enough to function. I don't know. Or just stop doing it. Okay, I want to talk briefly about this biphasic or polyphasic sleep too, which also seems like a thing. It seems like we're discovering that, say, in the absence of artificial light, human beings naturally fall into a sleep pattern where they sleep for the first part of the evening, wake up, and either, you know, continue to lie in bed or even get up for a while and talk, maybe, or read, or, well, I guess it would be hard without natural light unless you're going to do it with a candle or something, lantern, but maybe if you have a wife, maybe that would be your special lovey-dovey time, your sex time, sexy time. And then after a little while, maybe probably less than an hour, you would go back to sleep and sleep for another few hours. And I think that when I've made an effort to, at least during the summer, when I've made an effort to live with less artificial light, I do fall into that pattern. But it's shifted in an odd way, which is that this first phase is short, maybe only 2 or 3 hours, and I'm awake for a while early, like 4 o'clock. And I could get up then, but if I did, I would be exhausted the next night, like exhausted in the afternoon. And so I feel the impulse to go back to sleep around 5 or 6. And then if there's not any outside stimulus, even though the sun would have come up long ago, I would sleep till 10 or so. And I'd sleep very heavily. In other words, I'd be in deep sleep, very, like, hard to rouse at 9 a.m. And that would be more like my natural pattern. In the maybe spring and late summer. Something like that. During the shortest days, my pattern would be shorter. And it seems and feels during the shortest days like I need less sleep and get less sleep. I wake up naturally energized earlier.
Morning.
So, I don't know what that all means, except what it means is that I haven't figured out what my optimal sleep pattern is and what the optimal sleep pattern is for the kids, except that I know that waking them up an hour before it gets light is not right, and it's not good for them. We may need to do it because we can't change everyone else's schedule, but it's not kind, and it's not good for them. But I don't know how to make that all work. I think that if I went to bed at sunset, that my natural inclination would then be actually to be a lark and wake up well before dawn. But I would still need that, just temperamentally, I would still need that quiet time like I do now. Like, I hate conflict and argument and issues and interacting with people in the morning until a couple hours have gone by, until I've had some coffee, some breakfast, I've done a walk or done some reading. That's me temperamentally. And to try and, I don't think that means that in the winter that I would sleep 12 hours or more, like going to bed at sunset and waking up at sunrise. I think I would just be up at 4 o'clock. I don't know. Even getting more sleep than I do during the summer. But it just seems impossible to try and go to sleep anywhere close to sunset in the winter. I mean, the phone's still ringing. People are still showing up at our door. People have just finished dinner. Not had a chance to even finish cleaning up dinner. Anyway. And it's this weird race. And I would be curious as to your feedback on this. I do know that when I've had jobs where I work early in the morning, when I have to commute and be at a job at 8, for the most part, I'm still not really productive until mid to late afternoon. I can sit in a meeting, I can answer emails, but as far as really being able to concentrate, to write code, to do this kind of analytic work, to study code, to form coherent thoughts, that really doesn't kick in until, again, like later in the afternoon, when I feel a whole wing of my brain come online. Like booting up a second processor on the network. So I don't get it, and I don't quite know how to make it work. And I always feel off balance with sleep. Always feel like I'm not doing it right. And that I'm forced to not do it right. And now that I'm forced to make my kids do it wrong too. And it seems cruel. I know that some schools have experimented with shifting their day schedule, so they start an hour later. So for, like, they would start at 9 instead of 8. And I don't have studies at hand, but I think the results have been shocking as to how much the kids' test scores improve. And I can believe it. I remember so vividly getting up at 6:30, so far before dawn, showering, getting ready to go, going to wait for the bus. And at 7:30, it still wasn't really light. And then we'd head into school, and we'd be in morning assembly at like 8:05, probably 7:55, I think. And so we'd be indoors in a windowless assembly room, probably about the time the sun was coming up. It was really starting to get light. And then I'd spend the day indoors. School would be done at, what, 3:30, 2:30, 3:00. Home, I'd go to my job, spend that time under artificial lighting. It'd be sunset probably just about the time I was going to my job at 6 something, 6 or 7. And so the point is that I would not see the sun rise or set much at all. And that's also true very frequently of a work day. So when I was commuting to work at Visteon outside Dearborn, getting up early, leaving by car at 7 or something like that, 7:15, getting in before 8, working until 6 something, I don't know, sometimes later, and it would be dark when I leave. And so I'd go days and days really never seeing the sun. Working in a cube inside a building with where I had no access to natural light. And that, I know that, man, that fucks me up. So, wow, I've gone long. It's 47 minutes and it's still going. So I'm going to call that a win. I would be curious if you have any thoughts on how to reconcile your system's need for sleep, how much sleep and when, time to the daylight hours or when. I'd be curious for some feedback about that. If you had some, how do you do it? How do you juggle that? What works for you? I have in the past, and I still have one, maybe I should start using it, worked with a light, a super bright SAD light for treating seasonal affect disorder, where the idea being I would get up, as soon as I get up early, it was well before sunrise, I would sit in front of this super bright fluorescent light and basically stare at it for 20 minutes or something like that. I don't have 20 minutes to spare in the morning anymore. And it does seem to work in a way. It does seem to help. No, not that much. But I think the vitamin D, 10,000 IU a day, and also the getting out and walking for mostly an hour or more in the morning, and being out here for sunrise, that probably helps a lot more. So, but I might consider, there are newer models of light on the market that you don't have to stare at them so brightly. There are these natural alarm lights. We might try one of those or something. I don't know, we'll think on that. There's no good place to put it in the bedroom where the kids won't mess with it. It's that way about everything. Everything, every nice thing you might want to own or have, we have to think very hard about where would we put it and how would we keep it safe. And oftentimes the answer is, well, screw it, we'll do without. I'm fortunate if I can get through the day without having my glasses taken and broken. All right. I'm going in to go to my desk to work. The sun's up. Just a little. It's a beautiful day. Take care, all.